their product back where it belongs. It was a luxury item that very few people, you know, you eat on occasion, maybe. I mean, I don't even want to say that at this conference. Okay. Okay. So the other big environmental program is called EQIP. And if you don't make any notes on this, anything, make a note about this one. Even put it in your brain. EQIP. This is something that we vegetarians could definitely rally around at any time. We don't need a special appropriation like the $250 million that went to the pork farms, which, by the way, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals had a fabulous demo in the lobby of the USDA when those pork subsidies were going on. But that was $250 million. It's like a penny to me, you know, to the USDA. It's nothing. But it's something that you can actually tie meat industry, you know, to a subsidy. And but we can do this anytime we want with EQIP because it is it stands for Environmental Quality Incentives Program. By the way, there are dozens and dozens of acronyms at the USDA, dozens. And again, you know, once you got one, they don't go away. All right. So this is a subsidy to factory farmers. Simple. Just basically, that's what it is. A farm operation can receive up to $450,000 for conservation expertise and assistance over the lifespan of the farm bill that it's associated with. That's what it was for the last one. Tell you the truth, I haven't looked up for this 2007, but my guess would be EQIP. EQIP has probably been augmented again. Critics assert that this program, critics like me, and critics otherwise, assert that this program essentially dispenses money to the biggest farms so they can better tackle their industrial-sized manure problems. And believe me, I'm going to be talking about manure tomorrow morning. That is the overarching problem of all animal agriculture today. It's all they talk about is manure, how to take care of it, and what to do with it, because there's so much. Ultimately, these programs reward the wrong people, right? With the CRP, for instance, let's say somebody builds their own buffer zone at their own expense. They don't get any money, you know? So you want to be a poor steward of the land because then you get money. You know, and by the way, the land value with a CRP, I'm sorry, I'm going backwards a bit. Your value of your land goes up when you have these buffer zones. Did I mention that the government asks you what foliage you want put there? You know, so it goes on and on. So EQIP, I'm not going to mention anything more about it except just look it up and find out more about it and start your coalitions, vegetarian, vegan coalitions. We're not, you know, we have to start a new way of looking at things. Rancher subsidies. How could I have a talk about subsidies without rancher subsidies? These amount officially to $500 million a year, but the Forest Guardians have done some arithmetic, and they've done some digging, FOIA requests, Freedom of Information, and they discovered that it really is about $1 billion, correction, billion, I got to get those millions and billions right. The rancher subsidies consist of general support to ranchers on public lands, and support to ranchers on public lands means restoring the land from all the damage that their cattle are doing to the land. This is on public lands out west that are very arid and not conducive, period, to cows. They never should have been brought there. And in fact, cows, I'll be talking about this tomorrow, so I'm not going to mention. But the cows just don't belong out there. And yet, so the land has to be restored constantly. That's what the government's constantly doing with this $500 million all the time. And so in return for these ranchers get basically land at rock bottom prices, like, I don't know, a tenth or an eighth of the market value of the land, and they rent it from the government at $1.35, this is the last I read, maybe updated figures, $1.35 for a cow and a calf on an acre of land. That amounts to a whopping $7 million. So, you know, the government gets $7 million, we give them $500 million. So there's a difference of $493 million from the taxpayer. Okay, drought relief and disaster relief is another one. I mean, these ranchers don't belong out there. They don't belong on the West. I mean, I know John Wayne, notwithstanding, they don't belong there. Their animals rip up the land. Their buffalo and bison work great. They worked in beautiful ecological conjunction on the prairies, but Europeans brought cattle here, and by the way, this land is your land and this land is my land. Those are public lands. They're our lands, so we should have a lot of say about what goes on in them. But these subsidies, by the way, that's another thing. I mean, everybody, like right now, I'm saying, oh, how could you ever fight the House Agriculture Committee, you know? And everybody says that. You just can't fight them, you know? So everybody throws up their hands, and so they don't. And that's another pattern that we have to overcome. Drought relief in 2002 was $750 million. I have the article, I imagine. I wrote this note here, and I took notes from some articles that I was catching up on. If you want some references on these, I have references for everything. Research. Now, research is another perk that agriculture gets. And a lot of this, by the way, ends up in the hands of fruit and vegetable, or not in the hands, but benefits fruit and vegetable farmers, I have to say. This is their little perk. They get about 3/4 of the $1 billion or so, more or less. I can't pick this out exactly. It's very difficult. I tried. But of the $1 billion, the meat industry gets about 1/4 of it. And what do these things do? The meat industry has a million problems. They've got manure problems. They maybe want to find out the sex of an embryo, to find out, you know, they've got, it's sickening, really. They want a better semen extender for artificial insemination. It's gross, you know, but they want to know what to do with their feathers. The chicken industry produces, if you can even believe this, feathers are almost lighter than air, but they accumulate four billion pounds a year of feathers a year. Okay. So you got to figure out what to do with that, and probably what you're sitting on right now, these, you know, in the carpet, maybe in those things, that's where it all ends up. And you might have some of this newfangled fiber from poultry industry. It all ends up everywhere. Genetics research has worked to determine the sex of embryos, many research dollars end up benefiting agriculture indirectly, such as the development of a certain kind of corn feed that mitigates the polluting effects of hog waste. That's a biggie out there. And also tons of research dollars goes into how to mitigate the effects of bacteria. Deadly bacteria that's killing us, like all those food poisoning bacteria as I mentioned before. Universities. All right, the money is funneled through universities. I imagine there's a lot of money comes to this university. They're doing all kinds of things in their research departments. And ultimately, the discoveries that they have. Agriculture Research Service, by the way, if you want to write something down to do a Google on, they're the ones that report on the final end product of so I always reading about what's the latest thing that the scientists at the Agriculture Research Service have discovered this week. I'm on their email, their listserv. Now there's lots of export subsidies that directly or indirectly benefit the meat industry, and I just don't have time to talk about them. I'm just going to mention that there's, you can write down if you like, for do Googles in the USDA website, another acronym, MAP, is my name backwards, Market Access Program. It helps various people, including fruit and vegetable people, market their products in foreign countries. Dairy Export Incentive Program, DEIP, that's $53 million a year, last I checked. Helps exporters of U.S. dairy products meet prevailing world prices in foreign markets. Now, this is really discredited. This is very bad. Foreign countries do not like it when you put foods in their country that are subsidized and you meet the prevailing prices. Your stuff, because it's got to go across an ocean or something, it better be better than what they're serving up in their country, so people will buy it for the extra cost that it costs you to get it there. But no, government picks up those kinds of that difference. So that's not fair. That's not fair. Okay, producers of animal-derived foods possess a rare sort of chutzpah, which is a nice Jewish term I like. That's nerve. That's nerve, not just regular nerve, big nerve. When it comes to asking the government for bailouts. In 2000, Long Island Sound lobstermen asked and received $50 million to make up for losses they incurred because a parasite lowered yields on lobster. And last I checked, lobster is a luxury food. I mean, really a luxury food. The Bush administration in 2004 proposed funding of $441 million for programs to fight mad cow disease and other threats against the U.S. meat supply. And in what may take the cake of some of these, I mean, they go on and on. I'm not even beginning to talk about all of them. What takes the cake was back in year 2000. Dairy farmers asked the government for $1.3 billion to eradicate a disease that affects cattle called Yone's disease. Michael Greger talks a lot about this. He's got some excellent essays online. It's a bovine scourge that costs the industry a mere $200 million a year, and yet they want $1.3 billion to eradicate it. Whew, that's chutzpah. Okay. World fishing industries, fishing subsidies, correction, amount to, well, back in 1997 there was a story that subsidies to the fishing industries worldwide. Now, this is according to the Worldwide Fund for Animals, and that fishing subsidies came to $54 billion a year. So, we're paying fishermen to fish our oceans to extinction. Okay, that's a vegetarian issue, if you ask me. All right. The only figure I can find lately that's regularly circulated is $15 billion. So, you know, these figures, you hear from some people, they say one thing and another. So I usually, I err on the side of caution and use the least bad of the statistics, because they're bad enough. They're bad enough in my mind. You don't have to use hyperbole in this business, to being a journalist about the meat industry. I mean, it's always like an avalanche of information. Subsidies to support the production of animal foods are not only a disaster in economic terms, but they speed the destruction of the environment, the oceans certainly, and cause our water, our land, global warming. I mean, all these things. So you're going to hear all about it tomorrow. They cause unhealthful foods to flood the market. There is no way to put a dollar figure on a lot of this stuff. Like I mentioned before, the more hidden the subsidy is, the more valuable it is to the industry. That's what I've come up with, my humble opinion. Outside of specific cleanup projects, an example would be they've come up with an estimate to clean up the Chesapeake Bay, which has been basically, it caused all the underwater grasses to go extinct. I mean, this is like a rainforest underneath the Chesapeake Bay, and it's all extinct because of fertilizer runoff from the chicken business in Delmarva Peninsula and Pennsylvania, thank you, Shenandoah Valley, where there's a lot of dairy farming. All that's the watershed for the Chesapeake Bay, and it's destroyed Chesapeake. They say it's going to cost $19 billion to restore it. $19 billion, and this is not millions, this is billions. And outside of specific cleanup projects such as these, overall environmental costs of animal agriculture cannot be measured. Because it's runoff, you know. Who could, for example, put a dollar figure on the exemptions this industry enjoys from the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act? There are also, you know, the Clean Water Act, for instance, just didn't even mention runoff. And they have lawsuit after lawsuit, and they just can't. They say, well, you know, Clean Water Act doesn't mention this, so we don't have to do this. And this is probably why CRP came we have it as part of the Farm Bill, you know, because we didn't mention it in the Clean Water Act, we have to clean up runoff with the Conservation Reserve Program. Remember the strips of buffer zones. Health costs due to poor diets have been estimated at $250 billion per year in the United States alone. Surely this does not tell the whole story. Heart disease alone costs $270 billion every year, according to Vegetarian Journal. A study of California's Seventh-day Adventist vegetarians and non-vegetarians indicated that vegetarians use fewer medications, have fewer surgeries, and use fewer health services. Okay, we talk about health insurance costs. This is a cost to all of us. And finally, what's the true value? This is the biggie. This is the biggie that's like, it all pales, it makes everything I've talked about so far just almost negligible. Here's the big subsidy. It's invisible. Nobody even sees it. It's an unsubsidy or something. I don't know. What's the true value of the Animal Welfare Act to the meat industry? As written, nothing short of indispensable, invaluable, and incalculable, since the law exempts animals raised for food or fiber, meaning all factory-farmed animals. There's no laws to protect them, virtually none. There's a few laws here and there. They're very specific. The industry has totally gotten around them. In every way, I could talk another hour about that one. Essentially, factory farming only exists because of this exemption. So there you go. You know, it's incalculable. I call it a subsidy to the meat industry. It's the biggest. It doesn't even, you know. There are other reasons why we have factory farming and petrochemical fertilizers, which I'll be talking about tomorrow. But that's it. I'm almost finished, folks. Let's see. We're going to have a few minutes actually to have questions. Okay. Farm subsidies were ended in New Zealand in 1984, despite even higher percentages of subsidization and relative importance of agriculture to the country's economy than in the United States. Today's New Zealand's farm economy is healthier than ever. The next step for them and for everyone should be not merely to end farm subsidies, but to what? Tax meat. So that's, I mean, we're a long way away from that, although PETA is already talking about it, people with the ethical treatment of animals. So that's it. Okay. All right. I want to get this all on tape. So
you're doing the most important work that can be done by this movement, and I want to support it in any way possible.
You. I'm not doing any work. There is no support for this among vegetarians so far. What you can do is get me a plenary next year.
That's what you need. Yes.
Okay, get me a plenary. Everybody, get that for me.
Can I share just a few resources?
Yes.
Because I became obsessed with the Farm Bill about. I became obsessed with the Farm Bill about a year ago. And when I got my first document that was full of acronyms, the CRP, the GRP, the EQIP and so forth,
EQIP,
what I did was I said, I need to understand this. So I created a website called Farm Bill Primer. I have not had a lot of time to maintain it, but I do have, for instance, a mouse-over map of the House Ag Committee, so you can see who's on the committee. I also developed a strategy for doing data visualization on all of the spending, and I really want to share it with you. Mm-hmm. And for the next farm bill, we need to have all of this stuff in place, including advocacy.
A couple. My
name is Margie Roswell.
And
ROSWEL. My website is farmbillprimer.org. And
what do you mean by data visualization?
Well, all of the spending. What do we mean by data visualization? All of the spending that Pam mentioned is hard to understand. And when you have an organization that says we need to move the community food program, the CFP, from $5 million a year to $60 million a year, your legislators look at you like you're crazy because that is such an incredible increase. But when you see it, I'm able to display all of the spending to the extent that I can get the data. You can see all of the spending, and suddenly that ask looks like not even a drop in the bucket. It hardly shows up at all. So what, and I feel like I've, you know, failed the world by not having this thing ready to go because it was really hard to do. But a couple of resources. There's a great book that everybody here should get called Food Fight, written by an organic farmer who also started his own publishing company. He got no funding to do it. He produced a great book, Food Fight, A Citizen's Guide to Food and Farm Advocacy. The second, if you want to get involved in this issue, and we all should, there's a wonderful movie produced by these 20-somethings called King Corn. Everybody should go to kingcorn.net. Even though the website is lousy, the movie is great. And hold a screening in your community this month so that, you know, the House just heard the bill on Thursday, and there was a big amendment called the Kind Flake Amendment that went down. None of my Congress people supported it because they got all that I live in Maryland, all that Chesapeake Bay funding. They didn't want to rock the boat because it would have redone subsidies in an important way. So look at for who supported the Kind Flake Amendment. If they did, they're really, a lot of right-wing Republicans supported it because they don't like subsidies. Very interesting mix. People that you would think would be doing the right thing on that aren't. So anyway, the Food Fight, the movie King Corn, the data visualization strategy, and we need to create an advocacy movement that's political and not just, you know, yeah. So thank you for the work, and I want to support it.
Great. One thing I don't believe I mentioned with EQIP, which is the one that gives just basically a handout to factory farmers directly, is I read an article, I can't confirm this, but maybe you can, that you cannot even do Freedom of Information Act requests on this program because it's dispensed through another entity within the USDA. I'm sorry, I don't have the name. I have the article. So you can look at that. And when I heard that, I mean, I said, you know, and then it's obvious that they want to hide something. Obviously they want to hide something. And they want to hide that they're helping CAFO farmers, confined animal feeding operation farmers. Okay, got another question. What's your name, sir?
I'm John.
John, okay.
But Howard Lyman made a comment about how much more difficult it is now under Homeland Security. A lot of these companies, now it's hard to break through that protective wall in that they say you're inquiring into this information is exactly what a terrorist would do because you're trying to disrupt the profitability of a company which could lose jobs and so forth.
Well, there you go. That
and
is
so
the reasoning.
You're using this act, this terrorist act, then to hide information, and it's getting, like Howard told me, talk to him. He said if he would have done what he did then, that no doubt they would have both, him and Oprah would both be in jail today.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it's getting kind of scary out there for activists. So far, I haven't been affected, and I do a lot of activism. I'm always passing out my flyer, you know, 101 Reasons. Yeah, but I'm in Union Square, where everybody's a communist anyway. In New York City, I don't know if you know where that is. Uh-oh, I better. This is going online. Well, yeah, I know. I mean, that's the reason why you can't find out about this EQIP. It might be. You know what it might be? I bet you it's because CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations, that's the technical euphemism, they're the factory farm operations. They don't want to give names and addresses. That must be it, because they're afraid of activists going in to their facilities and taking photographs. That's got to be the reason. John, again?
Yeah, John. I'm not familiar with everything that you do, but the thing is, a farmer, all of these subsidies, how many can they apply for? Can they apply for everything? It sounds to me they'd be taking in far more money than they're even making.
Well, that's interesting, because I remember reading an article back in about 2002 or so, just coming to mind right now, is that, in fact, farmers bring in subsidies about the same amount of money that they make. That was when the subsidies were really going high up, and this was right after that 1996, it was called Freedom to Farm Bill. Freedom to Farm is a total, you know, kind of euphemism, too. Yeah, that is about 50-50. Or they're making, but you know what 50-50 really means? One-to-one really means they're making 100% of what they make. That, you know, I remember from my arithmetic class. Okay, Victoria.
Yeah,
this is Victoria Moran.
How do these subsidies benefit small farmers, vegetarian-type farmers, organic farmers? So what's their opinion on subsidies?
Well, I was reading an article about that, and there's some discussion now that vegetable and fruit farmers are going to start getting some handouts themselves, and this is a political ploy. This is a play or a ploy, I don't know.
It
buys off California, it buys off Florida, so that they will support, you know, the subsidies that are the real lion's share of them, which are in the Midwest. And last I read, organic farming brings in only $1 million in subsidies. They have a program in the USDA, and it's $1 million program, and that $1 million to the USDA is really nothing, you know, compared to this other stuff. I don't know. I'm busy. You know, I'm busy with 800 things. But when I look up these subsidies. You know, it's sort of like the blind men and the elephant. You know, I just know about the tail. I don't know the end. Okay, that's a long way of saying I don't know. I don't know, but I do know that I read one somewhere that organic farming has a program that's a million dollar program, which is nothing. Okay, Nick, I just want to say that I will be putting this up onto the internet. So if you just want to use your first name, you know, or your last name too. Hang on a minute. Okay, here we go.
Nick Carazzi. I just wanted to point out that what you can boil this all down to is that if there were no subsidies, meat would be so expensive that most people in this country would be vegetarian out of economic necessity. And all subsidies are immoral and unconstitutional. There's nothing in the Constitution that says anything about helping this taking money from everybody and helping this person out. And there's a stealth candidate, a libertarian candidate, who would end all subsidies, who's running as a Republican. And, of course, the Republicans hate him and want to try to discourage him from being in the debates. But Ron Paul, look up Ron Paul, and he would end all subsidies to everybody. Whatever the costs are for any particular product, you pay the true costs. And then we'll see what people buy.
Okay. Thanks, Nick. I have no comment on that. That's just tremendous. Okay, anybody, other intelligent person, you want to give your name, sir?
My name is Ted. I'm just curious if there's a lot of information that you gave, and I know it was a complicated presentation. It's hard to understand. Is there any way to put it in some kind of a table form? Have you tried doing that so that you can actually look at it and at a glance understand all the subsidies and all the costs associated with this?
I'm sure there is. I've thought many times I should at least put this into a book or a pamphlet.
Marjorie, I was asking you. Have you thought about that?
They're different because you've asked different questions, because the data that I have is simply like appropriations, whereas what you've done is asked more sophisticated questions like, how much of this is supporting meat production, which isn't really an appropriation.
Yeah,
right. So together, I have a spreadsheet that's a combined spreadsheet from the Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, which is all the conservation funding, combined with FRAC, which is one of the hunger groups, which are if this is going on the internet, there's some things I won't say, but so I have a spreadsheet, and my data visualization tool, which is free on the internet, something you can use, allows you to see it all. And then it would be interesting if you could take your numbers from your talk and just put it into a spreadsheet as well, just so that we have a list of it.
Wonderful idea.
Yeah, because we have a pretty devoted bunch of people here who came to the talk, and I think, you're not going to... And I think we found it hard to follow. And that's understandable because it's a very complicated topic. If you're going to convince people out there in the real world who have an attention span of 90 seconds, we really need a way of putting this in a very graphic form, at least so that it would encourage them to look more closely. Because I think it is really mind-boggling how big it is. It's like you're standing next, it's like the elephant in the room, or you're standing next you're standing next to an iceberg or something. You just don't realize how big it is, and you can't put your mind around it. If there's some way you could just say, "Wow, I see it now."
All of this, I feel, is just it's such at the nascent stages. I mean, I'm trying to bring this up. I don't mean to insult anybody here, but vegetarians tend not to be political. They just don't. I mean, they don't. They say, well, I'm a vegetarian. I'm doing all I can do, and it's a good thing. But like I mentioned before, we have a different perspective, and we can cut through the crap a lot of times that other people just, for emotional reasons, really, won't bother to do or don't want
to
do. Now, Victoria Moran had a comment.
Yeah, I'm not good at numbers, so a lot of the things that you said, kind of go over my head. But I read a book several years ago called Innumeracy for Mathematical Illiterates. And one thing I remember from that book was the difference between a million and a billion. So just to kind of get some of these numbers, a million seconds pass in 11 and a half days. For a billion seconds to pass takes 32 years. Mm-hmm. Oh. So when it's like, okay, so they gave him 200 million, they gave him 200 billion, it's just a lot. No, it's a huge, huge difference. So whenever you see the B word, just wake up. It's big.
I was having some problems with those millions and billions.
You're doing great. I have
to
add. I also tried to calculate what a billion was.
Okay, Marjorie Rosewell again?
Yeah. If the day Jesus was born, he put $1,000 in the piggy bank, and then he did it the next day and the next day, and then someone did that every day up until today, it wouldn't add up to $1 billion. Now, I talked to astronomers who told me, about the calendar, and we calculated how many days there were between the year one and the year now. Multiply it by 1,000. See if you get the same result that I do. $1 billion is a huge amount of money. $1,000 a day times 365 days times 2,007 years plus a day for every leap day, and you have to know that centuries don't have, just like do the calculation. $1 billion is a lot of money.
No compounding interest.
Howard Lyman mentioned.
He said that if you removed all the subsidies, at least the ones that he could uncover, meat would be, $46 a pound or something?
I've heard figures like that. I don't know where they come from, though.
I've heard up to 75, down from maybe 30 up to $75 a pound.
It's just common sense that tells you that's the case. Okay, I think we'll wrap it up with that. Thank you, Nick, and thank you, everybody, for coming to this talk, Subsidies to the Meat Industry. I'm Pamela Rice, and this is the NAVS Summerfest. That's NAVS Summerfest 2007. And if people want to contact me about anything that was mentioned, that I mentioned in my talk, or that was mentioned in this great discussion afterwards, they can contact me, Pamela Rice, through my website of the nonprofit organization that I run. That's vivaveggie.org. Again, www.vivaveggie.org. O-R-G, and that's Viva Veggie with one G. And that'll do it. Thanks again.